when I believe that my view is right, it might not be for them. You know, you can't you can't force everyone, and not everyone is going to be on the same path you are. I'm definitely like an extremophile. Like when I do something, I take it to like the extreme, which isn't always great, but it's provided me a lot of good benefits.
It's something that we see with a lot of successful entrepreneurs we've had on here. Definitely.
Yeah, that I take things like to the extreme. If I'm doing something, like I'm going to do it really well, and that's like all I'm going to be doing.
Money is not the end goal. It is simply a tool to achieve your dreams. So now that you've thought about it, you know what your dream is.
The worst people are the ones that can't even admit it now. That even now, after like all the new things and you know, all the emotions and all the fear has gone away, if you can't look back now and say like, bro, I got fucked, they tricked me. Like I was like, I got tricked. You can't admit it now. And okay, I'm gonna read this book because I wanna learn this and this. I'm gonna listen to this podcast. I'm gonna listen to the interview from this guy because he built this company. I wanna learn how he did that.
Welcome, Maudits.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's very good to see you again. Last time we saw you was back in June, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, back in the summer. I saw you guys. Good fun. We had a good talk. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. The recording didn't quite work out. But yeah. This time we're doing it in English as well.
My bad.
Yeah, Gio's bad.
So yeah, something, the files got lost, but now we got to know each other. No, it feels like we're more friends right now.
Yeah, exactly, Yeah. I think a better dynamic natural. Now.
Everything happens for a reason.
Also, exactly. We talked about it already, the timing. You got banned, your TikTok got banned. Mm-hmm. Then you had like 20,000 followers on Instagram. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Things have changed a bit. Things have changed.
Definitely
changed. Yeah, bro. So I mean, I grew like over 110,000 followers in the last like 60 days about. So yeah, so it's going well.
What have you been up to all the time?
Life's been good. I was traveling a bit after I saw you guys. I went through to Monaco and Saint-Tropez. You know me, I love traveling. But then back in Cape Town, really been getting a lot of work done. And life's good, eh? Life's good.
That's good.
Getting where I want to be.
What's your main focus right now, like work-wise?
Main focus right now, like now that my agency, like I can kind of scale myself away from it. Mm-hmm. My main focus right now is just like personal branding, just creating content because there's just so much value. I mean, you see Mr. Beast, the billionaire now, you're Kylie Jenner, like all these people, like the new wave is content. And all the guys, like even Iman and these guys that tell you how great it is to start an agency, mm-hmm. they're going all in on content. And everyone, Andrew Tate, like these guys are telling you, okay, do this model, do that business model. Mm. But themselves are all busy on content. So content is the move and having an audience is so valuable. And I'm noticing that already, even with like a relatively small audience compared to those superstars. Mm-hmm. So content is what I'm focusing on right now.
Yeah, I truly want to give you props because you've been killing it. Like, especially because we talked before the podcast and the way you talked about like the way you're doing marketing and the way you really like studied the game. So you've like studied the whole way of like, yeah, post it on your feed or don't post it on your feed. What times, if you should tag someone or not. So you've done the research, you've really done the work and you can tell that it's actually working out. You're seeing results now.
Yeah. I mean, I think the difference between the people that get the really good results and the people that don't in any aspect is the advantages they have in terms of knowledge. The mm-hmm. people that do the best in terms of investing, the Warren Buffetts, the Ray Dalios, these guys simply just know more and implement better things that are more effective than the average person.
Yeah.
And they take more things into consideration, so they'll always win. When I was 15, I was working at a very big hedge fund. I was their youngest employee ever, and this was like at the peak of the crypto. And they'd hired me to manage their crypto subs. I mean, I was 15 working with this big hedge fund money. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much about how important information is. I mean, these retail traders that are just, you know, throwing $200 in Bitcoin from their mom's house and thinking they're going to be rich. They have no idea what really goes on in these massive companies. Like the amount of stats and like data these guys work with is ridiculous. They have like teams of hundreds of analysts looking at things. You're not going to beat them if you don't know the information. No. And it's the same in content. There's guys that have whole teams of experts analyzing things, hundreds of editors pumping out shorts, long form, everything. And the advantage you can get is that information. So I studied the algorithm and I did a lot in my agency for businesses. And I implemented the same things I'd learned in my personal brand. And it's proof it works because I've been growing it all very quickly.
Undeniable.
Yeah, hashtag undeniable. That's the way to do it.
Have you always been this hungry for information, like since a young age?
Yeah, I mean, I've always known that information is like the key. And I'm very like blessed that I can retain a lot of information very well. It's the same way in school, how I'm able to study really short periods of time and get like amazing results. And that's why I read so much, because I can retain so much of the information mm-hmm. and understand how important that information is. And we're so lucky in today's day and age, we have like an over amount of information. Yeah. It's everywhere. True. You know, with Google at your fingertips and YouTube, you can literally access any information you'd
want. It's your own fault if you're stupid. Honestly, yeah. There's so much information.
There's actually too much information. People are learning the wrong things where you can really get a massive advantage if you just learn a few things and a few useful things and study them properly. Like, I studied the algorithms because I knew there was a lot of benefits to that. I studied the markets because I knew those were really high ROI activities to be studying. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can learn everything there is to know about like Fortnite or like Pokemon cards. Like anything, people do that, right? It's a good thing to study and sure, it's like whatever, nice. Yeah. But like the ROI on that isn't crazy. But if you learn something that is really beneficial, like if you get really into like gym stuff, you know a lot about that. Like it can benefit your life so much. Mm-hmm. So I'll pick a couple high ROI things like sales, either how the markets, like investing, algorithmic things on social media. Pick a couple things and really study them. And you'll get far ahead of everyone else that's busy with 10% there, 10% there. If you really go all in on a couple of things, you'll beat everyone easily.
Yeah, but don't you think it's like a two-edged sword? Because on one side you have this incredible amount of information on the internet. You can literally learn anything, everything about any subject. But then on the other hand, there's a lot of like worthless information out there. How could you filter the worthless information out? And as well, because you have so much information, it's easy to procrastinate, to get caught up in stuff. Do you maybe have some tips or tricks?
Yeah, so the two things, so that's answer the two questions. How you differentiate information that's useful or not is the person who's telling you. If my business teacher is telling me about business, but he's driving a Honda Civic and he doesn't know a thing about business, why would I listen to him?
Yeah.
But if I hear Ray Dalio, one of the guys who runs the largest private hedge fund in the world, Bridgewater, I'm going to listen to what that guy says because he has the information to back it up. Mm-hmm. If Alex Omozi starts talking about business, I'll listen more than my business teacher does simply because people's lives are results of the information they have. So if they're giving you this information, as much as like your parents, like they have the best out for you, but if they don't have the situation you'd want to have, you don't want to adopt their way of thinking because their way of thinking got them to where they are. Yeah. So you need to be very clinical with who you listen to. And due to the nature of the internet now, you can watch hour-long interviews with how Warren Buffett values companies. Yeah. I mean, this was never accessible 20, 30 years ago. That is like information that's worth millions and millions. So if you implement it properly, it's very advantageous. And in terms of too much information, people have massive like shiny object syndrome. They're on the one thing, then they're on the other thing. And they're constantly just searching from things. They're jumping in from trend to trend, but not getting anywhere because you need to actually just stay on one thing and properly focus on it. So there's an overstimulation of information. Yeah. But if you break down, you logically think, do I want the outcome of the life that this information gave them? And if it's a yes, study that and learn it. And like I said, pick a few things to study really in depth instead of studying 10 different things with this shiny object syndrome and just running around like a headless chicken. Oh, crypto, SMMA, SaaS, content.
The woman in the red dress, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you gotta keep your focus going because
it reminds me of something Alex Ramosi also said. I think Warren Buffett actually said this, but he described it like when you have a field, you could go 10 meters wide, 10 inches deep, or you could go 10 inches surface 10 meters down. Like the focus, like are you going to go a whole broad subject with like 10 inches deep or are you going to pick one and go all in on it?
Yeah, I mean,
it's better to be a specialist most of the time.
Yeah, well, it depends. I think to get to a certain level, you need to be a specialist. Like I think $1 to $1 million dollars a month, you need to be a specialist. You need to be very good at something. But off that, you need to become very generalistic. Like Elon Musk, he was a specialist to get to the first stages. Like he had to know exactly what he was doing. But now you have to be very generalistic. If you're running big companies, you need to start thinking very generally because you need to be able to understand exactly what your engineers are doing, exactly what your marketing team is doing. You need to get very specialistic in the beginning to get to a certain point, but at some point you put people in place that you don't need to be a specialist anymore and you need to become very generalistic to understand what all the other specialists are doing.
Yeah. But I do think the basics are really good because I think you need to know the basics in order to hire the right people. You get what I'm saying? So if you don't really know how marketing works and it's kind of hard to like hire a marketing manager.
Good job.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you that you need to understand whatever you're hiring people for, but you need to understand it. And then for a while after you've done it for a while, you can put people in place. And because you understand it, you know that they're doing a good job. Yeah. And they're not just talking. Like people will hire, like I see it a lot in the nature of my business with agencies. the people that do the best are the people that companies that already understand social media and they hire in experts because they know it can describe better what they want. They can give the specialists better instructions than people that have no idea about social media, like get me views. Yeah. And, you know, it's much harder because they don't understand how it actually works. They don't understand that's a process and they won't get views overnight, things like that. And where the companies that already know a lot about social media, they're the ones that have worked best for me. So yeah, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, you just mentioned your parents and I actually want to know like this drive, this hunger for success. Is this something your parents taught you? Is this something that you were just born with and you don't really know where it came from?
I mean, the nature versus nurture argument is like, I think I've always had it. Like when I was younger, I mean, I go to a private school, but I'm on a full scholarship. So I'm around a lot of really, really like other very, very successful like kids like around me because of private school, but I have a scholarship luckily. So I was able to go to this really, really nice school without having to my parents to pay this large amount of money. So I always saw it and I always wanted it because I saw the type of life it gives. I think just logically thinking as well, money does just buy you a better life. I mean, you can get better food, better holidays, bigger house, faster car, like everything you really want is on the other side of money. So I decided early on, like, listen, like I'm not going to live a life where I don't get this. And from very early on, like, I mean, I was selling sweets at school from like 7, 8, I would just run down to the shops. I'd work out, okay, what does it cost me per lollipop? If I buy this in 20, I would write it down and I'd add on my margins. I'd sell it out. And I had like 5, 6 kids under me that I would buy the stock. They would sell. I'd give them commission. So I learned it from early on. And I mean, after school, I would go with my friends. I'd buy lemonade. I literally just like spreadsheets and work out everything, my ideal margins, how much I was selling, keep track of everything. Mm-hmm. And I would just go on hot days and sell lemonade to people running along the beach.
That's crazy.
And from there, just that was like the first businesses. And I'll talk a bit about my past. So that was where I really started and I fell in love with entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
But I really got into it at like age 12. Then I was like, it's like, this is a really...
Insanely young for a lot of people here.
It is insanely young for a lot of people here, but that's when I got like really invested where I was like, there's all side hustles, you know, selling sweets, selling lemonades, that type of thing. I would make pottery as well and sell it. It's like doing anything just try to get some money. And then I would, you know, like a kid, I was going to buy FIFA points, like, you know, use the stuff like that.
The more knowledge you got, the more areas you could.
Yeah. So I started studying a lot like about finance when I was 12, because I realized I could learn things very quickly. Like from early on, I knew I was a smart kid, like in like the earliest math competitions, like, you know, there's like in South Africa, you have like a test where it's like, you know, everyone in this grade writes a test and I would get to like the top 10 of the country for math at age 10, competing with like up to 13-year-olds. So I was super good with numbers always. Yeah. And I realized, okay, like I've got this gift, like let me use it. Mm-hmm. So I realized early on that I could learn things and understand things quicker than most people. But I thought, what a waste if I were just not to do anything with this.
But also at that young age that you knew how to leverage other people's time or knowledge or whatever, you know, just to hire them to sell lemonade for you. That's crazy to hear.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's 10 years later, now at 17, I implement the same things on a larger scale.
On a larger scale and more focused. And I think also with the topic about being specialized in one thing, maybe then you are specializing in management, in people management, and HR. I don't know. How do you think about that? Is that something you have to focus on if you want to grow and delegate stuff?
People are very difficult. It's like the most difficult thing to study is people because they're so unique and there's so many ulterior motives and so many factors going on. So I think you really need to find out like, okay, why does this person want to work for me? Is it really just for the money? Like, are they passionate about what they do? And I don't really care if they're passionate. I care about if they can do a good job.
Results.
Yeah, so because the people that are passionate, they lose their passion. I hire guys that are so passionate about editing and then like a month later, they're passionate about someone else. So I don't hire based on that. I have a competence is the most important thing. Can they actually do the job? And like if they're honest people, they have a good track record. If I talk with people and it's like, this guy worked for me. He always handed his things in late. He was horrible. He was inconsistent. He was always nagging for things. Mm-hmm. So people's reputation is very important. And so whenever I work with people, I try to keep my reputation as good as possible. I give them bonuses. I treat them well because I know it's in the future it will always come back.
Yeah.
So I treat my employees well.
It's a great mindset.
Yeah, exactly. I think employees, I mean, they're the backbone of the business. Like without them, I wouldn't be able to scale because I can only do so much in a day. So you treat them right and I think the results will come.
Yeah,
true. It's more like a family bonus instead of just employees, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have most of my things on commission, mm-hmm. which I think is a way better model because, I mean,
that could work, then.
I have a funny story. I got called into the principal's office just before I flew over because the teacher thought I was dealing drugs at school. Because I have a little, he's like 15 years old. He's one of my sales guys for one of my companies.
15 years old.
He's 15 and I hired him as a sales guy because he's really good at sales. Mm-hmm. So I walked into school and I had like about €1,000 worth of cash. I gave him commission for like the last 2 weeks of sales. Mm-hmm. So he done really well, and I was going to pay him was 20,000 Rand, which is about €1,000. And I gave it to this man, this like briefcase. And at the end of the day, I got called into the principal's office and he was furious. She was like, some kid saw you handing this kid cash. Are you selling drugs? What are you doing? And I was like, no, man, I'm paying him. He's one of my salespeople. It was like, are you selling drugs? I'm like, no. So I'd explain exactly what he was doing as this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And she really didn't believe me in the beginning, but I had to like show the website. I had to pull up my like bank account. Look, and these are the sales he made. This is the commission he got. And at the end, it's like, oh, can I work for you? The principal said.
Did the principal say that actually?
Yeah. But as a joke, Oh, okay. I'm sure it's a joke. But
quite small-minded, I guess, right? Because how many people... You're 18, right?
17.
There are not many people that are 17 that are making that much money.
No. Yeah,
you got to understand, for those people, they think like, what the fuck's happening right here?
So that was quite a funny...
Yeah, they don't even know that stuff's possible for themselves, let alone for someone at their school.
Because this is something your parents have always supported. Like, are they entrepreneurial themselves?
Yeah, I mean, they do support it, but they also do like want to go like down the traditional path. Like, they want me really to go to uni and things like that, and they say it's a waste if I'm so smart and I'm not going to uni. So that's a decision I need to make now, because next year I'll be finished with school. So I have like a year left to decide. Now, if I do want to go study, maybe in Holland somewhere around here.
Still thinking about Rotterdam, right?
Yeah, maybe. But I'm not so sure of all of it. Like maybe I just want to, you know, just go like travel the world, and you know, if I can make money from my laptop already, like I might as well continue doing that.
Yeah.
It's only growing. So,
but do you feel like a pressure from your parents that you need to take the traditional route, or do you know they'll accept whatever you'll choose?
I think in the end they'll accept. Like then they'll know I'll make the decision that's best for me. But I mean, I think your parents, they always want safety for their kid, and university is the safer route, but the safer route isn't always the best route. Mm-hmm. But you'd want to mitigate risk. You know, university is great to send people to because they're learning things. They're still in a safe environment. You know what they're doing every day. And you know, they have like a set framework. Mm-hmm. The main thing university is good for, you can learn anything from university without university. But what is nice is it gives you a framework. But I don't need a framework. I'm self-disciplined enough to do things myself. It tells you, like school, like people go in school and they'll do fine. They'll learn things. But outside of school, they'll never learn something again because they don't have that framework. They don't have 8 o'clock till 9 o'clock. You have math, this and this. So you have a test on Tuesday at 9 o'clock. When you're forced to learn things, people will learn things. But if you're out of school, you have no structure anymore and you need to implement structure in your daily life to keep learning things. So I set books, like I need to have this book finished in 3 days, and then I'm testing myself on that book. So I set my own structure.
You actually test yourself?
Yeah, completely.
Damn.
I'll recite like the most important things and I'll make notes, and I don't read just to sake of reading. Mm-hmm. I read to study.
I think that's a good habit. Yeah,
to change habits.
Yeah, exactly. So you do need self-discipline, and university kind of makes it easier for a person because they don't need to, you know, set these things themselves. The professor tells them what pages to study this to this, is a test on this. Mm-hmm. So it gives people structure, which is very, very nice for parents to know. Mm-hmm. But I think if you have the self-discipline, it's not required. But I'm still making the decision. I'm still very unsure if I want to go to uni. But if I do, either one of the Ivy Leagues, like Harvard, Stanford, one of them in America. I
mean, there's no right way.
If you have the opportunity for a uni like that, that makes it very...
hard to say no.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating that you said this. I don't know if you know Founders Podcast.
Sounds familiar.
Basically the best podcast on the planet.
After
our ones, of course. But what he does is basically every episode is a biography. So he reads a biography every single week, and he's read like 400 of them. And he was talking to someone who is in college right now, studying something in business. And he asked that person, how many books have you read? How much information have you treated, like processed, in the last 2 years? And he said, yeah, maybe like 20 books. And he said, in the last 2 years, I've literally read 60 biographies. So basically what your study is kind of slowing you down because it's put the maximum on 20 books. Well, I'm doing my own study and I've read 60 books in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean,
so you can create your own study. So he's basically created his own college because he said you can literally just skip business study, just listen to my 300 episodes, and you'll have a whole business study done by yourself, and it's free too. It's cheaper.
Exactly. I mean, you can learn anything. There's nothing the university teacher teaches you that you can't find between books and YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. But it is simply the structure and the piece of paper you get at the end of the study.
Maybe which the is network, the connections. Yeah.
But it cuts
network,
out the bullshit. But you can too,
also.
Right?
That's true. You can also
do it. Networking and all that. Yeah. But the university experience is something cool. So I'm not sure about it. I think I might start like a first year and then drop out.
Like, just for the story.
Just
then.
To say I dropped out of Harvard. Yeah.
But actually, if you can combine your business with a uni, then why not? I think, you know.
No, I'm completely with you on that. Yeah. You can do both. People are so inefficient with their time.
Yeah.
They waste so much time. People are like, oh, I don't have the time to start a business with school. Like, I'm still in school and I'm doing it.
Yeah. Like me for myself, when my uni just started like 2 weeks ago, I'm actually more productive now because I know that I don't have all the free time I used to have last year. So now I have to use those hours that I'm not in school to work.
Yeah, I know. It
feels like pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
So that self-discipline, that self-pressure can drive you a lot more than any uni can.
That's true.
Yeah, it's
that's
like,
difficult. Yeah.
It's the most difficult part about getting something. Like people don't like realize it's not easy.
Where
like,
do you get that discipline from? Is it from fear? Is it from desire? Is it from
fear? If I'm going to be honest, it's a lot of fear. Like, yeah. But fear of myself. I feel like if I look back at myself in 5 years or 10 years and I'm not where I want to be, I know I'll just miserable. Feel that like regret in my chest. And that's the feeling I want to avoid. But as much as like, it's also, I mean, like just fear, but also running towards something. Like I'm running away from this fear, but also like I'm running towards these goals I really want. Yeah. But I want everything that comes along with the money. You want the freedom, you want the respect, you want like the luxurious things. So it's something I'm chasing. I'll continue chasing. And I know maybe a superficial thing to chase is money, but I know it'll provide a lot of benefits in my life and up the quality of my life immensely if you do have it.
Mm-hmm. True, but it's also love for the game because you've done this from a young age. So yeah, never really had to force yourself to like really, you know what I'm saying? Like you truly love what you're doing. So you're never really like forcing yourself.
And you prioritize your health. Like it's not like you're just giving up everything for the money. You still wake up early.
Yeah, exactly.
Treat yourself well.
But back to the discipline thing, you can train discipline just like a muscle in the gym. And that's something I've been actively doing for years now. I mean, I don't want to sit down and read a book, but I do it anyway out of discipline. Mm. I don't want to sit in an ice bath first thing in the morning, but I do it anyway. You don't want to go to the gym, but you do it anyway. So this is something you completely train. And like I've really come to the point where like if I say I'm going to do something, like I'm going to do it like I'm fully set on doing it, which is something that like, took a while. Like, and it's something everyone struggles with. It's not easy discipline, but the whole process isn't easy. You have to give up a lot. Like, I remember last year, I had a friend tell me, and this was when I was like completely like, and like, I was completely grinding. This was beginning last year. And I was really like, my business was starting to take off. And I was like ghost mode, bro. I wasn't anything except for working. And my friend, it was a good friend of mine who I'd known for years. And he called me and was like, oh, come out. I was like, no, I'm busy working. He's like, oh, you're working. Every time you've been working, just come out, live a little. And it really just hit me the wrong way. I was like, wow, if you really supported me, like you'd be for me. I'm in this tough time right now. And then a year, it was like 14 months later, I called them and it was like, are you missing out? I called them in the Maldives and I said like, now you're the one missing out, was maybe selfish of me. But then, and he was working at a restaurant at the time when I video called him because he was like, oh, you're missing out, come out. Mm-hmm. And then I called him up when I was in the Maldives and I was like, yeah, you're missing out.
But pity that's that me, thing, maybe. Like there, he probably means the best for you, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's just a different mindset.
And actually, come close with him. I helped him out. And he has his own business going now.
Sometimes it takes a little longer for them to grow up, right?
You have to show him. You have to show him what he was working for.
Something I found very difficult is that you can't help and convince everyone.
Definitely
like,
not.
As much as I believe my beliefs are right, like to focus on health, and I see like a lot of like friends around me like vaping or drinking, like I'll try my best to convince them, but you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink as much. Like, I see a lot with like family members, like cousins or whatever. Yeah. And I'll try to convince them like so much that this is like the right path, you know, self-discipline, work, starting a business, like self-education. I know they're more about the other things. And like as much as I can show them and I believe that my view is right, it might not be for them, you know. You can't force everyone, and not everyone is going to be on the same path you are. And there's something I struggle with because I'm definitely like an extremophile. Like when I do something, I take it to like the extreme, which isn't always great, but it's provided me a lot of good benefits.
It's something that we see with a lot of successful entrepreneurs we've had on here. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, like I take things like to the extreme. If I'm doing something, like I'm going to do it really well. And that's like all I'm going to be doing really.
Yeah.
And so that it kind of rubs people the wrong way sometimes. Because if I'm so focused, it often you know, irritates people. It kind of infuriates them, maybe out of jealousy, but maybe out of other things. Mm-hmm. But I find it difficult. Like when I see people completely doing the wrong thing, like it just angers me somehow. But I think it's out of fear that I become like them.
Yeah.
So maybe I do it out of fear that like, I'm scared that I myself am doing those type of things. And I just like, you know, I'm scared of myself getting like that, which maybe that's where it comes from.
But what's it like in Cape Town? Like, are there more people over there that are also extreme? Because here you've met our other friends. All of our friends are quite ambitious. Goss and Amir, you've met them during lunch. And I don't know if the same case you've got in Cape Town. Are there any friends you've got over there that are ambitious just like you?
Yeah, definitely. I've got a crazy network of people when I can Cape Town, like complete killers. Okay. A lot of my friends, a lot of people a lot older. I have a very, very good network of people that are all very ambitious. Because of nature, I'm in school, I'm around other young people that aren't on the same path. Mm-hmm. But with my friends, like they're all fucking killers too. Like all of them are crushing it in their own ways. I do. There's definitely a lot of ambitious people as well, I think, anywhere, because like the nature of like the bubbles you're in. You have some people that are completely in like, you know, these Tate bubbles, and they're completely in like a gym bubble, you know, whatever you see on social media. Mm-hmm. So there's some people that are those really upward spiral things, but some of them are very degenerate, like scrolling through and they're just seeing terrible things, like promoting whatever terrible things they're promoting, and you know, they get lost in that own echo chamber. Mm-hmm. So I know there definitely are a lot of really, really successful people in Cape Town, and I love Cape Town. It's home for me, and that's where I've lived my whole life. Basically, I grew up a bit in Holland when I was younger, but Cape Town is probably the best place in the world to live, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll have to see it ourselves.
Yeah, we're gonna find out maybe next year in February.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you should come for us. I'll show you a good time. It's
dude.
What advice do you have for young people like yourself, maybe a few years younger, who have that ambition, but they just see that their friends, everyone around them, just doesn't have the same vision? How can they meet people with similar interests?
Online is the best answer to that. Like I'm now recently opening up my community again, which is access to a bunch of other really young entrepreneurs. So you can find that more information on my Instagram from that. But if you put yourself in the right rooms and the right communities, you can get access to the right people. It's impossible not to. You can reach out to people. I mean, I have so many kids reach out to me that, you know, doing like $2,000-$3,000 a month on like their little business, and they're 15, 16, and you know, and they network with me, I talk with them, and we learn from each other. Mm-hmm. So online, you might not have the odds off, you're like in some small town in America or whatever, odds are there's not many other people like you, very ambitious around, but you online, you can find them. There's so many people online, and it's such a growing movement, I feel.
Yeah, a very positive movement, I think. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there are just so many people, like there's no way you won't find any other people that are doing the same thing as you're doing. Like the network is so big, the internet is so big. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I completely guarantee. Like there's people for everything you want to get. If I want to get really into meditation, like there's a group of people that are really into meditation that I can learn from. Or you want to get really into money making, there's people you can talk to, and really into fitness, whatever it is. There's people for everything.
People, there's information as well. There's books about anything, you know?
Yeah, and if you're doing, because I was wondering, because you're doing quite high intensity work right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get like overwhelmed? And if you do, like what is something that you do that helps?
I do get overwhelmed if I'm being honest, but I've never had a burnout. Like I've been going like fully in entrepreneurship, like 5 years straight now. It's like my main focus. I think in the nature of like the biohacking I do, I stay like optimally healthy. I get blood work done. I see exactly like where I'm sitting. I'm like peak health. Like I can think clearly, I can think sharply, there's no brain fog, I can work long hours. And because of the nature of the things I've implemented, I'll give a few tips. Like ice baths are phenomenal, like for your energy and just for your levels of discipline, like mentally, it's the best way to start the day. Incredible. You feel like a warrior after. Mm-hmm. So I recommend that. Either take a cold shower, take an ice bath, go swim in the ocean, and get blood work done as well. Because you're never going to know if you're lacking vitamin B12. You know, it's found in like some random fruits that you're not eating enough of. You might just be feeling a lot of brain fog, low in energy, and you don't know, like it's impossible to know without getting blood work done. So I get blood work done like every 2-4 months, which is great. So I can see exactly what like cortisol levels are doing, what like everything is doing. So I like that to stay like completely optimal. I eat very clean. Like I don't eat any junk food or anything like that, just because I feel like more mentally clear. So I'm mainly carnivore diet. That's what I found worked best for me. I was vegetarian for a while as well. Really didn't like it that much.
At least you tried a little.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
different stuff,
you know? I don't hate on any people that have like, they've like paleo diet, or they go full carnivore, they go full like vegetarian. It's whatever works best for you.
Exactly.
I recommend most people try like a carnivore with a bit of fruit and vegetable. That's kind of what I'm on and what I find works best for me.
You don't eat carbs?
Not many, no. Okay. Very, very, very seldom. Mm-hmm. And just what I found works best for me.
Yeah, but you just have to test like it for yourself.
It's like your own body.
Yeah.
Like some people perform really well on carbs. Some people don't. Like I think I'm somewhat in the middle ground. But I also got a sauna installed at my house now, and I've been investing a lot in my health. Like I bought a sauna, I bought an ice bath for my house just because it's so much more convenient, and I can like get in the sauna every day, and I'm reading and I'm stretching in the sauna. So I like to stack things on top of each other.
Yeah.
Another big advice I'll do is every morning do some type of breath work. Wim Hof breath work is great. Oxygen in your body is so important, and so many people are literally so deprived of oxygen. So I'll do somebody like 8 to 13 minutes of Wim Hof breathing, which is just a lot of in and out breaths. And then you let go and you hold, and then you hold, breathe in again and you hold for a bit. And that's so good because most people are so often sick because they don't have enough oxygen in their system, because the root of all disease is the lack of oxygen. And that's the way you die. Any death, if it's now an event or a disease, like you might think of it as an event, getting shot by a bullet or getting hit by a truck. When you're actually dead is when there's no more oxygen going to the brain. So you're often like, you're very sleepy after a flight. It's because the air, and you don't like breathe very well in the plane because there's such a low oxygen content, because it's, you know, they can't put in fresh air the whole time. So often like when you're most tired, if you do like one round of Wim Hof breathing, you'll see that you're really just lacking oxygen. That's why you were so tired. So if you have enough oxygen in your system, you can work so much better. So I'll do that and an ice bath every morning, Wim Hof breathing and ice bath every morning. And it really helps like overall health. Like,
these are also topics you read about a lot or not?
Oh yeah, I like to read about everything that I think will benefit me. But yeah, I think biohacking is so important. Just optimizing like the vessel you're in to do the work. Because in the end, you're the one doing the work. Like your body needs to be optimized. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be able to think clearly for hours at a time. And, you know, if you have brain fog and you're tired the whole time, you know, that really isn't the way you want to be doing it. You want to work as effectively as possible. Mm-hmm. You've got to be, you know, like a machine. You got to like treat it right, you know.
Definitely. Well, next time you're back, we're going to meet Wim Hof. I'm going to email him. Maybe we can set something up. He lives here.
Let's go.
Yeah. I was wondering, because you're talking a lot about your health and something happened. You had an accident during a football match and you didn't break your back, right?
Nearly. I still am recovering from that.
So about the strap?
No longer. I'm out of the strap now. But I was actually due for back surgery. Like it was quite an intense injury, which I hate because I live so healthily, and to have such like a freak accident was very annoying. So I haven't been able to train. Like if you saw me like 2 years ago, I was really like I was very big. I'm very skinny now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was benching like 100 kilo at 15. So also gym was something I got really incensed up. I was could do like 30 pull-ups, like more than 10 muscle-ups straight. Like I was really, really fit. When I think it was one of those things I was crazy about. Like I'm crazy about money now. Like I said, I'm very obsessive. Like when I get into something, I get super into it. But I haven't been able to like train properly for more than a year now, which is tough because this back injury, but I'm slowly getting over that. And in the meantime, I'll read more instead of going to the gym, etc.
Yeah, you sound quite optimistic. But did you ever feel like in the beginning that you weren't really optimistic, that you were really like struggling with it, like that you can't move your body the way you used to?
Recently it's been like one of like the like most mentally draining things for me, because I loved going to the gym, I loved exercising, I miss running, I miss all these things I was doing every day. It was such like a big part of my routine and my self-identity as well. It's like they kind of stripped away from you and there's nothing you can really do. It's tough and it's
thing kind of powerless.
I just want to get back into it, and it's such a long recovery time. It was August last year, so it's more than a year now. It's 13 months of not being able to train, which isn't nice at all. But I think everything happens for a reason, and in the meantime I've been, you know, gone sulking about it. I use that same time and I'm spending more time, you know, in the sauna, ice bath, reading, working,
recovery.
So yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you think about it, because now you've collected more knowledge about the biohacking, and then when you're recovered again, you can do sports plus biohacking, and you'll be like
I'll be an animal when I get back. I'll make the prediction now. When I'm finally healed, you'll see like a crazy transformation, because it's one of those things I studied. Like I know everything there is to know about the gym and body, but I can't talk about it now because I, you know, like I said, you can't have your business teacher talks about fitness, so I'm not going to teach people about fitness right now.
You can still be fit without being extremely
I've still like, you know, like six pack lean, and I've never say that, but you know, I was big and I was strong before, which I'm not now, so I never talk about it because I don't, you know, you don't want to listen to a guy that doesn't look like he knows what he's talking about, so I'll wait till I'm back.
Yeah, probably there's a lot of people who want to be in our shape. That's something that I always think about, but we ourselves think of ourselves as like.
There's always someone bigger, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Body dysmorphia. Nature, social media. Like that, yeah. It's the same with business as well. Yeah. Like, you know, you have people definitely. Like looking at Iman and stuff, and he was like 23, and he's got like, what, 40, 50 M's probably?
40?
I'd guess.
Probably around there.
Ooh. So something like that. And people estimated higher, but it's around that. So seeing him and like physically and being around his team, it's probably about that, which is insanely high.
Yeah, bro, about Iman, like, he's your neighbor.
He's like two houses
away from you. How is it like being around him? Do you see him like do his morning jog and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, he's I've nothing but good things to say about him. I think his content's great, his message
seems
is great.
Like very genuine guy, man. Yeah.
Because everyone always asks you, right, if he's running with the car behind him. If that's
yeah, really he does. He thing. Does do that. I see his body, and I'm friends with a few of the people on his team. I'm not like very close with Iman myself, but I know, and I've sit often with some of his team because they're from Cape Town originally. So I often grab lunch with his videographers and those type of people, and I've nothing but good things to say. His team are all great people.
That's cool,
and I see them when they're in Cape Town. I've had dinner with them once or twice at his house, and he's an incredible guy. He's a very good marketer. I think everyone at that level, same with Tate, like all these guys, they're brilliant marketers. I mean, you look at like how he turns kind of fear into his own profit, as much as he's a great marketer. Yeah, like I've nothing but good things
to
say.
He knows how to sell product.
Yeah, and I mean, brilliant talker too.
Yeah, if everyone here in the Netherlands knows him already, that's like insane to me.
Yeah, he's killing. I mean, you had like his whole, he did like the expose of the IMF and stuff. You know, he creates a lot of fear to promote his own agendas, which fair enough. I mean, he's killing it. I think his message overall is so positive. So I have nothing but good things to say about him.
Are there a lot of famous entrepreneurs going to South Africa?
Often you will see them like that December, January time. Cape Town is like one of the hotspots because it's summer there and then it's winter in America and Europe. So a lot of people will come down. And you see a lot of big names, and you know there's a lot of wealth in Cape Town, which a lot of people don't expect. But there's a lot of very successful people that come down to Cape Town. But back to Iman, he is legit. People think it's faked. It's amazing because he's undeniable. You know, he has his whole journey documented, which is very cool. And I've seen him, you know, spend like thousands and thousands on bills, on bottles. Which, you know, he preaches against sometimes.
He does the opposite that he actually preaches about sometimes. But
yeah, sometimes. But yeah, like I said, I mean, yeah, he is young and it's incredible what he's achieved. And I hope to be in a similar position as he is at that age. And I'm nothing but good things. I think he's a force for good and something we need. And he's a role model to so many people. So yeah, I can never bash him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's already inspiring if he's just, even if it's like two people that he really moves into the right direction, then whatever he's doing is fine.
And he's moving thousands and thousands
for sure.
If the message is positive, it's all good with me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people look at the messenger instead of the message. I think the Tate situation was a brilliant example of that. People didn't like Tate, but his message overall was so positive.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the amount of like actual information, not just the TikTok clips, you look at the full length content, his message is overall just so positive. It's like, take accountability, work on yourself, you know, stop doing degenerate things, work, go to the gym, make money. These are all extremely positive things, which the media often doesn't like. And they'll dig into those type of people, which...
Yeah, especially the new content that he's making right now. Because if you look at the older content, then... Because sometimes he'd say something like right now, but then if you see a clip from like 4 years ago, then it's something completely different, right? But the problem is they recycle the old clips the whole time. So then you think, well, he just said that, and then they just see that. Cause like, you get what I'm saying? So it's kind of hard for people. I kind of understand why people hate him too, because people were so good at like clipping his clips.
Yeah, he has two sides, right? It's like the comedy side and the serious side.
And it's hard to like really understand sarcasm if you didn't watch the full video.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything out of context can be put badly. I like Tate overall. I think he's positive. I think some people dick ride him a bit too much. Like the Tate fanboys can get out of hand.
Yeah.
But overall, it's a very positive message he has. And I mean, you don't get that famous. Like you have to think it through. Like you don't just get that famous on accident. He's clearly a genius. Like his plan that he took over social media. Like every other TikTok, you would see his face. Like that doesn't happen by accident. You'd become the most Googled man in the world by accident. Like Meticsy had a plan, he went through with it and it worked amazingly, and he made all his money basically from that. It's the same with Iman. He did very well in his agency, but what took him now to the next level is his personal brand and his own SaaS company, which is affiliated through his course. And it's the same with Tate. He made good money, whatever, doing webcam and kickboxing and owning casinos. But the real money came from his his the real world and his Hustlers University. Yeah. And that's how he really goes to the crazy numbers. So a lot of people like that and they need to get those clips. So they need to talk out, say some wild things to get the attention. Because mm-hmm. If you're just saying what everyone else says, no one cares. Mm-hmm. But if you're saying really outlandish things, like Tate often says,
marketing, right?
It gets clipped up. That's how you have to do it.
Yeah, you talked about like the Hormozis, the Kylie Jenners, the big personal brands of the world. You've done quite well for yourself right now. Like we talked, the growth was pretty insane. What's something you'd give to people who want to start their personal brand? Maybe some advice?
Yeah, I mean, just to give people context, like I've hit 10 million views like organically this month between TikTok and Instagram, which is very good, like with zero paid, nothing, just me. I think the studying is very important and understanding the algorithm. To break down the algorithm, it's all about watch time. So you need videos. Everything in your video should be leading up to keeping people watching. So the placement of your sound, you should place the sound just before the best part of the song, because people know that when the bass drops or when the chorus comes, and people want to hear that. So I always put the sound in my videos just before that, so they're sticking around, they're waiting to listen to the chorus, and as the chorus comes, like a video kind of ends. So that increases watch time a bit. You want subtitles that engage and keep. They don't have to just listen, they can read, and not big long things. There's a small bit of text, like one or two words popping up the whole time. People are so deprived of dopamine, you need to just throw things at them, sound effects, zoom in, zoom out, a bunch of clips, a bunch of edits, sounds. You want to keep people on the video as long as possible, and that's all that really matters for your content. So you can need to strike an emotion, either curiosity in your hook, like it's like, oh, top 10 things to make you rich, and people are like, okay, well, what is it? Or you need to say something angry, like I hate fat people, and then you go on and explain, like you need to just something to trigger some type of emotion to get the result. Because if you're just bland, no one cares.
So that's the hook, like if you scroll, just get that attention immediately, because like the dopamine is insane. People are scrolling so fast. Yeah. You have to get attention, right?
Like the first 2 seconds of the video are the most important. Like for me, you're seeing a lot of my videos. I'll put like 2021 at the top. So people subconsciously know it's going to cut to like what current day is. Everything I place in my videos is for a reason. Like, and everything all the big accounts do is for a reason. It's not just by accident. They chose that font for a reason. They chose that sound. They chose the duration of those clips for a reason. Mm-hmm. So you need to learn all that, especially in your niche is so different. Because like mine is a lot of edits, it's lifestyle stuff I post, which does well for me. But if you're posting podcast clips, you need to look at it very differently. You need to find the most engaging parts of the podcast, add the right captions, add the right zoom in, zoom out, because it's not a bunch of clips. It's like one prolonged clip. Mm-hmm. And you need to make that as engaging as possible and not just stagnant. So you need popping up captions, you need to, highlighted words, you need to zoom in, zoom out, add sound effects, cut to the other host, cut back to me. And that's,
And the duration of the video, does that matter?
No, TikTok right now is promoting a lot of videos over a minute, which isn't great because my videos can't really be a minute long because it like this becomes too long. But for podcast clips, it's great. And TikTok's opening because they're trying to compete with YouTube's market share now. So they're promoting videos. I mean, if you literally go on TikTok's website, the first thing that says is we are promoting videos over 1 minute plus.
Oh, really?
They're not hiding it. Yeah, they're trying to compete. And so videos over a minute do really well now, especially with the CPM on TikTok being so high. You get paid now, like $2 per 1,000 views, which is similar to YouTube.
Insane.
On videos over a minute. I've got some friends that are making like $60,000 a month just off TikTok, like literally just from AdSense.
I think it's only America right now, right?
America, UK now as well. But you can just buy those accounts for like $50. But you run them. So I have a guy that has like over a mil. He just literally does like Reddit stories, and under he has Minecraft parkour and just captions, and he's generating crazy money. I know a bunch of guys like that, and it's serious money because TikTok, is the move right now.
So you can buy accounts from the UK, and then you can use
the US. You need a US tax number, and other things to get the account like official. But you can just buy those off like a bunch of different Discord servers for like $40 to $50, like a blank account that's just American based, and you grow that up. And once you hit 10,000 followers and every video over minutes, those views are like the same payment as YouTube. But it is so much easier to get 5 mil on TikTok than it is 5 mil on YouTube. So serious money. A lot of people like aren't aware of it, but people are killing it. Like
we need to look into that, bro.
Yeah, YouTube automation, now TikTok automation is the next thing.
That's the key now. You've also helped companies with their growth. Their TikTok growth?
Yeah, so I'll talk about like from the beginning of my journey. So I really like at 12, I started my first proper business, which was dropshipping. And I got into dropshipping because I heard everyone talking about it. Yeah. And I had a store that did terribly and I started another one that did really well. I was selling fitness products online, running ads through Facebook. And it was quick, easy fit. And it was basically just like gimmicky fitness products. And I was 12 and I started making like serious money. It was crazy, like a whole new world to me. And it did really well. And this was 2019 about. Mm-hmm. And I ran that out and that store did really well. I eventually kind of ran dry. And then by the time this was like March, April, 2020. And then I heard about crypto. I was like, okay, well, what is this thing? And this time I was 13. And I took all the money I'd made from dropshipping and I threw it all into crypto, like every single cent, like nothing. And this was about as good timing gets. I saw the whole COVID thing and straight away I thought, this is so oversold. Like there's no way. And people are getting fed up with the government. So I thought crypto adoption would be crazy. It got way crazier than I thought it would ever get because it went absolutely insane. Like you couldn't get it. Everyone was talking about crypto from like school teachers to housewives to again, like shoe polishers. Everyone was talking about crypto. And I got in before all of that because I knew like, listen, the Fed was, because I'd been studying so much, I'd be reading so much. I saw that when quantitative easing happens, when the Fed starts buying up things, markets go crazy. Same in 2008, when it was at the bottom, the Fed started buying up everything, and, you know, and then it just pushes markets like crazy. So I saw what had happened in the past because I'd been reading so much at that point. From 11, 12, I started reading all the finance books.
Insane, bro.
Like all the books that everyone talks about, I had already read by the time I was like 13. So I knew how the whole system worked. So I was like, okay, now is the time for me to really make money. This was such a big depression. Everyone was scared. I was like, okay, no, now is the time I need to put in plans. So I looked into a bunch of coins. I bought a bit of ETH, bit of Bitcoin. But I heard Vitalik Buterin talk about a coin called Matic. Well, he indirectly talked about it. He said the importance of layer twos in Ethereum. I knew Ethereum was going to do really well. And this is when Ethereum was like below $100.
Jesus.
And it went up to, so this was like, and I bought some ETH then. But he was talking about how important layer twos are in Ethereum. So Ethereum is a layer one blockchain. You can build on top of that. Yeah. And he was hinting at the importance of that. And he was saying how that's the future of Ethereum. And I believe in Ethereum, but I was like, okay, Ethereum's already quite a high market cap. Like these things built on Ethereum are going to go crazy. Like I know it. So I looked into a bunch and the best one I found, and I really liked the team. I heard about Matic, Polygon Matic. It was called Polygon at that time. And I looked into it and I really liked it. And I put in like 80% of my net worth into this one coin. And I knew that like a lot of people do a lot of small trades.
Ray Dalio will be pissed right now.
A lot of people do a lot of small like trades that buy 5% that, 5% that, 5%, you know, spread it out. But in crypto, it's probably the dumbest thing to do because the whole market moves together anyway. If Bitcoin goes up, everything goes up. Mm-hmm. So it's stupid that people even consider doing that for diversification, maybe like unless you're getting rug pulled in your coin.
The rules don't apply really to crypto.
Crypto is different because of just how correlated the movements are.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just shooting machine guns, just shooting at random coins, hoping it. I liked it. Everything. I looked at the team. Yeah. I looked at the charts. I looked at like everything and I found out, okay, like, this is the one. So I looked at the team, you know, where this guy go to uni, like where passes he went. Like I went deep in that thing. I like, what connections do they have? Okay, this guy that's high up in Matic. Okay, he did this for this company. It was a high up in Google. Oh, he's got connections with Vitalik Buterin this way. And I knew like, okay, this is the one that's going to be built on ETH like crazy. And I rode that up like more than 400X on my initial money.
Please tell me you sold.
I sold most of it. Yes, I was in an Uber actually. This is how I realized to sell towards the top of the crypto market. I was in an Uber.
That's how wealth is made in the Uber.
And this was when Bitcoin was at 63,000. So 69 was the top
peak.
So it was 2 weeks off the peak. And my Uber driver was like, "Oh, get into Dogecoin. This is like the move." And I was like, "This is it." Like, because I'd recently the week before. About another, it was the bull run just of the dot-com bubble. And I was reading about how when the shoe polishers start giving you stock tips, it's time to get out. Reading back and I just remembered that story and I was like, it's time. Like there's no way this keeps going. And everyone's screaming for 100K Bitcoin, $1 million Bitcoin. And I was like, done. Like this shit's about to blow. So I sold like 80% of it. That same day when I got out of the Uber, I ordered another Uber home to my PC. And I was like, bro, it's like, I felt like it was like moments within exploding. Mm-hmm. And it was tough because afterwards I sold it for 2 weeks. Like things kept going up. I was like, maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe it is going to 100K. Yeah. And I was like, I was stressing out, but I still had 20%. So I was kind of happy with that. But I'd sold majority of it and then hit and the crash really came. And I shorted a bunch of coins as well, which made me crazy. Which I shorted Luna.
Went
to complete zero. Jesus. I made like, I threw in a bit, but I made like 1,000,000% on it. But I only threw in like a couple hundred dollars. Because I saw CZ tweet out about Binance. So he's the owner of Binance. He tweeted out he was going to buy FTX as well. There's this whole dilemma there. And I just thought, no way.
Yeah.
This whole thing isn't going to work. So I saw the FTX. I lost some money, a lot of money in the FTX crash.
Me too.
But I'd shorted the FTX token. So I lost the money I had, but I had it on another account. So I kind of hedged my position that way. But I shorted Luna very well. Pepe as well, the meme coin that went crazy. It was like beginning of this year. Over a billion market cap. I just loaded up shorts. Now, because I just looked at the wallets and there were like five wallets holding all the supply. And I was like, when these guys see they have like 200 mil worth of Pepe, they'd rather have 200 mil than 200 mil worth of Pepe. And so those wallets started dumping and I just completely shorted it. It was a picture of the green frog that made so much money. Like,
I haven't seen that one.
It was a meme coin earlier. It wasn't even the peak of bull market, but it was like
a crying frog or something.
It's a crying frog, yeah. And it went like ridiculous. And I just like, this is worth a bill. No way. It's just shorted it, which is dangerous in crypto to short because things can keep going higher.
Yeah.
So I've done very well in crypto. Insane. And then I started my agency after I moved this money from dropshipping into crypto. I started an agency because I had this big crypto portfolio, but I wanted cash flow. And I looked at everything. I thought, an agency is really good. So I started studying a lot about social media because I just knew that's where the world was heading. And so that's what my agency was going to do. Specifically on TikTok, running TikTok ads and growing company socials. And I'll just get put in a retainer for a lot of really big companies and I'd run their socials. But I'm now kind of moving myself away from that, like, because I had my personal brand very associated with it. Mm-hmm. And I even lost clients. When I changed my username to Maris_Tate, I lost a bunch of clients from like makeup companies and big companies.
But people didn't know it's actually your name, right?
Yeah, middle name.
Yeah, because we thought you were a fanboy of Tate.
Yeah. No, so it's my middle name. Bro. Yeah. But so people got like really triggered when I did that and I lost clients because it's so now I've kind of moved away from the agency. I still manage all of it, but I'm not actively. I've got the right people in place. So I still go to meetings and important things. But mostly I'm distanced away from that. And now my focus is on content and creating my community, Young Wealth, which will be opening very soon, which I'm looking forward to a lot. I've kind of like closed it and reopening it in stages. Mm-hmm. But I've got a lot of cool stuff. I've collaborated with a lot of other young entrepreneurs. And it's kind of like somewhat to the real world, I guess. But I have like a young professional boxer teaching fitness in there. I'm teaching crypto and money principles. And I've got a guy that does a lot of money of YouTube automation, the guy I mentioned, or that mm-hmm. does TikTok as well. Yeah. He's teaching inside how to grow these TikTok accounts with these faceless pages and how to grow a YouTube account, YouTube automation, where you're basically just taking clips like top 10 Dr. Phil moments, those like pages where there's no face behind it, but they're mm-hmm. pulling in a lot of views and all that ad revenue. Mm-hmm. So those are the type of things we teach as a dropshipping guy as well. So I kind of brought together this team of all these young experts. And together with me, we're teaching different topics inside. And that's a bit what I'm working on right now. And that's projects I really like a lot because the content, I get so many messages of people that want to learn, that they're ambitious young people. They just don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. And Young Wealth will be the solution for that.
Yeah, because we were just talking about that there's so much information on social media and you don't really know how to filter it. Well, then this is the solution because you've got a community. So if you want to learn something about fitness, you've got the expert teaching you. You don't have like a fake guru teaching you on Instagram. For finance, you can teach it. It's kind of like the perfect system because you skip all the bullshit.
And it's also like such a vetted networking place because everyone that joins, we as well have like a physical networking mixed with digital. So once you join, you put a location in your town so you can see like, okay, there's a member 700 meters or in the same town as me, or like the nearest member is 20 minutes drive. So you can go to the gym together, start a business together, network together, go meditate together, whatever it is. You can find like-minded people in the real world, as well as in the chats. There's some kid in Brazil that's earning a couple $1,000 a month making logos. He can then connect with the guy that runs an SMMA company in the States. And they can network, share what they learn, and maybe help each other with the logo, the other one to help with their social media, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's dope, man.
So it's like a vetted networking system because the only people inside, you have to be under 18. And it's like already they're showing interest in entrepreneurship.
You have to be under 18.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of the... We had it at 20, but now we're sending it to 18.
Why 20?
We had it at 20 before because there's just more leeway. But now we have a strictly under 18. So most members between 16 and 18 right now.
Because you're basically like you found a solution for the problems you mentioned earlier in the podcast. The first one was about the network. Well, you fixed that in a Discord because now you can put in your look. So you can put in your location in the Discord. How does it work? You put like a flag
Yeah. So it's through the Discord, but then you get like through Google Maps. We have a shared community map. So it's all with a bunch of software.
Discord has a lot of migrations and stuff like that.
Yeah, the Discord's great for those type of things, but it's a lot of external, a lot of software, and a lot of time spent creating this, which I've really been busy with the last couple months, because something I enjoy as well, like working with big companies, like it's chilled, but you know, I get way more passion out of, you know, having seen a kid hit his first 10k month, or seeing a kid make his first $100 online. It brings a lot more fulfillment,
seeing the growth in the person himself.
And then like, you know, if it's like $1 billion company and, you know, I grew their socials 100k, it's like cool, but like, you know, I don't feel anything really from that.
There's no value truly, there's like, no value. Personal connection.
I think this is really the next big wave. Like, when I hear you talk, it sounds like you're very good at recognizing the waves. Like, you started dropshipping. That was like peak dropshipping times. I think we all literally learned about dropshipping. You actually rode that wave quite well. Then you went to, after the dropshipping was crypto, was the next big wave. Also got in, got out at the right time. Now it's personal brand. I think this is the big wave, but I'm also think this is like a tsunami, bro. This wave will last for years.
I completely with you. And positioning is what I attribute a lot of what you just said to. I was in the right places because I put myself in the right places. It's not by accident. I just by accidentally invest in a bunch of crypto. Like, no, I meticulously thought through. I, you know, just take my sniper shot. I, you know, saw the wind, the moisture in the air, and I boom, headshot. And that's what I want to do every time. So I'll think carefully before I go into something. And then, you know, I'll put everything in place and do it as well as I can. Because you create good products, and the money will come. When you make good decisions, the money will come.
Yeah, definitely. So especially positioning, if you connect with like-minded people.
Yeah, positioning is so important. And like, if you put yourself in the right places, you'll get this flow of money. And money is like water. If you think about it, how it moves, you have cash flow. It's the flow of the water. Yeah. Banks. People should study banks, but what is a river bank? They control the flow, the cash flow. So it's all, and that's the current, the currency, it's all to do with water. So if you look at-
Never thought about it like that.
Money is like water. There's a lot of subtle hints like that. And I advise a lot of people to get financially educated. It is so important if you understand how things work. And like my crypto move, I attributed all to financial education because I understood what was happening in the markets, what the Fed was doing, what their rate hikes were going to happen, and everything along with that. And they dropped interest rates to literally zero. And the big thing they also changed is that there's no more backing for money. Before, you had to put in those fractional reserve banking. You had to take 10% of the money you deposit. They had to keep in the bank. During COVID, they lowered that to zero very secretly. They could lend out unlimited money. It was all fake money in the system, and it's basically still like that. They've never changed it back. But a lot of what people don't, you want to think about the matrix, what people don't pay attention to is the biggest trick in the book is like, look that way and you fuck with something here. If you just look, I'm not going to get the podcast taken down, but if you look like Will Smith slapped or Chris Rock slapped whoever slapped whoever. That same day, there's really big things. But yeah, so it's literally like the oldest trick in the book where you do something on this side and you switch something around on this side. And it's completely, if you want to talk about the matrix, that is literally what the matrix is. Whenever you look at a major policy change that no one really knows about, on the same day, there's always some celebrity nonsense. Like Will Smith snapping Chris Rock, major like Federal Bank Reserve rules changed on that day. It's the same for like, oh, Cristiano Ronaldo with some girlfriend or some other thing. There's whatever the celebrity drama. Oh, Justin Bieber's new girlfriend. Oh, look at this. Whenever there's a bunch, the big one was, you know, the Satan one from what's that Lil Nas X.
Oh, yeah,
everyone's talking about his Satan things. All the media is talking about. But secretly, like the British reserves have 0% reserves anymore. They don't back any of your money. So your money is just completely, it used to be 10% of, like they had a whole 10%, it's zero now. It's completely imaginary. On these big days when there's, you know, it's a crazy coincidence that every time there's a big policy like that, the media never talks about it. And there's always some little minor celebrity thing that has all the attention and people debating about this thing the whole time. Or on the back end, on the really important things, the actual like makers of the world are changing things. Same if you look at BlackRock and Vanguard, the two companies that everyone always talks about are Matrix, but those companies own everything. If you can literally go and look at any publicly traded company in America, from Nike to Amazon to all the media companies, all the pharmaceutical companies, the top shareholders of everything are BlackRock and Vanguard. They own literally everything and they hold all the writing votes because people give their money to invest. BlackRock bailed out the American government in 2008. That's how big they are. They have $14 trillion under management. BlackRock and Vanguard together have over $20 trillion in management. The only countries bigger than that, with GDP bigger than that, is America and China. The BlackRock and Vanguard are literally the third country. They're bigger than Japan. They're bigger than Germany. They're bigger than France. Any other company, any other country, yeah. Vanguard and BlackRock, and most people have never heard of them. Mm-hmm. These people control the world more than anything. Any policy that gets put in act, they get a vote on that because they hold these shares. As much as it's your money they invest in, most of it's not anymore because their things grow so exponentially. And they have an AI. BlackRock has an AI called Aladdin. It is the smartest AI in the world. They have spent billions making this AI called Aladdin, which is kind of creepy.
Yeah, it sounds
It is predicts financial markets unlike anything anyone has ever seen. They can take in millions and billions of different factors, all these inputs, and this AI model will out-trade any trade. You think you in your mom's garage are going to beat out this billion-dollar AI that has the smartest minds in the world working on it, and it can take in so much information. It is like ridiculous. This thing can predict everything.
That's insane.
So they know exactly where the markets are going. As much as we can try guess, they literally know. They have all the data and they can shape world events around it. Guess who's rebuilding Ukraine? Oh, BlackRock just met with Zelensky and they're rebuilding Ukraine. So if you really look at how these world events happen, those two kind of like companies are so massive that they're like unstoppably big. No one can like, because of the nature of compound interest, every year if they're growing 10% and Aladdin is doing way more than that, bro, they are growing at a rate like they'll be bigger than any country is like within 5-6 years, which is just ridiculous.
Plus they all also like create problems, right? And they give you the solution.
Yeah, you
like
create the problem and you sell the solution.
Yeah.
You create some disease, then you sell vaccines. It's just a hypothetical example. But if you create the problem and you sell the solution, that's the unlimited money glitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at just how the whole system works. You have Lockheed Martin and Boeing, these massive military industrial complex companies. They have massive lobbying in the US to send money overseas. So of course they're incentivized to go ahead and send money overseas if all the politicians are on the payroll of these massive companies and they're lobbying to start these wars. Because they're, you know how much Lockheed Martin and Boeing are making with the US, who has no involvement in Ukraine, is sending so much money over.
Yeah.
These massive companies that produce the fighter jets, that produce the guns, the bullets, the helmets that they're sending over, these guys are raking in money. Because American politics are literally bought and paid for. Because every senator needs to raise money. Because they need money to run for their next election. They need to promote, you know, they need to stay in office. And they need money for that. And the company, if Coca-Cola gives you money, when you start voting on policies, you're not gonna rule out Coca-Cola.
No,
so that's how it works. Every politician in the US is bought and paid for just because how the nature of the elections work. You need to stay in office. And if you don't have the money, the only money comes from these companies. So if you're getting endorsed by McDonald's and Coke, you're not going to vote on policies that fuck over the guy that's literally funding you being in that chair voting on that. So that's why the whole system, American politics, is so broken, is because everything is bought and paid for. And these major companies, like the military industrial complex, pay so much money out to these politicians. It's all open donations. You can see how much money Tesla is donating to people. All these companies, much as the ones you might like, are donating to buy over these politicians, but they're raising money. The Democrats raise money from certain companies, and the right wing is a lot funded by the military industrial complex. And a bunch of these companies that people might like Tesla's so good. You know, if you know what's happening to get those lithium batteries in the mines out in North Africa, these literal kids in these mines, no company is as pure as it makes it seem. To get to that level, it's not clean and you need to be cutthroat to get there. And every company is. If you look at how evil companies like Monsanto, the company has literally poisoned the whole world with their food supply.
Monsanto
is a big chemical company. They do all the agriculture in the US. And what the shit they put in those pesticides and feed people. And it's the same if you look at seed oils, like canola oil. Yeah. They put on it hot, healthy, when it's literally proven to cause so many more heart attacks. And because it's so easily oxidizable, which means it oxidizes really easy, that shit literally kills you. Canola oil, like seed oils, if you have one like health things to get out of your diet, cut out all seed oils. Like that shit kills you. You'll gain weight. You won't be clear. You won't gain muscle easily. Canola oil and all seed oils are horrible. Use avocado oil, coconut oil, or real butter. If you look at like margarine, they use so many seed oils in that. It is terrible for you. Same in mayonnaise. There's so much seed oils in those things. Those things literally kill you. Like, I advise people to look into what seed oils really are. It comes out, there's because corn is so cheap and you have all these really cheap corns and there's the seeds left over. They crush them out, but there's very little oil in those things. And it comes out really gummy. Like, it's like a gum, like tooth, it's called chewing gum. Mm-hmm. And that's not a paste, you know, that doesn't look good. So they boil it up to 400 degrees and they add a bunch of bleach to try get it clear.
That's how we create seed oils.
Yeah, this is how the process. The seed oil itself isn't bad. Because of the process that this seed oil goes through, it is terrible. It gets bleached so it looks clear. You're drinking and it's straight, literally like mental, terrible like things. Same with fluoride. Fluoride is literally a known neurotoxin. The stuff that's in your toothpaste, you use in every toothpaste, but it's not proven it'll also be healthy for teeth. Mm-hmm. So it's in your toothpaste, but I have two fluoride-free toothpaste. I advise everyone to do the same. It is actually a proven neurotoxin. If you look at the back of your toothpaste container, it says, if swallow toothpaste, please see a doctor. It is a neurotoxin. And you put that every day. And how much, even if you're not swallowing it, you're still getting it. So everything is out there, not for your own harm. The same if you look at the news. The news is free for a reason. They're not just doing it out of the kindness of their heart to inform you. They want to push agendas. Yeah. Of course they do. Everyone in the world would want to push their own agenda. I would do the same. If I was in power, my belief, which I think is right, I would push on people. And if I have billions and I can bribe politicians and I can move mainstream media, I'd want to push that agenda too. They're not bad. They just have the ones that have the power to push their beliefs. Mm-hmm. So like BlackRock and Vanguard, they'll only vote on policies that will benefit their own shareholders and their own company. Why would they do anything else? They're only going to make things that line their own pockets better. They don't care about the general good of the population. So everything that's free and is super cheap is for a reason. Like these fucking canola oil companies that sell this literal like cancer in a bottle that everyone puts in every food that's in chips and everything like that. Because it's so cheap. These things are so abundant. It's not like they're evil. They're not sending out to do it. But it's just cheaper than getting avocado oil. So people take it. But it's so, so bad for you. They don't want what's best for you. They want what's best for their bottom line and their shareholders. Exactly. So they'll do everything to just increase profits. They really don't care about you. They're not there to keep you healthy and to keep you informed. The news isn't there to inform you. They're there to push their own agendas because they're getting paid to do so. So of course they will.
Back to BlackRock and Vanguard. Do you have some recommendations on books, articles, maybe shows to learn more about them?
Larry Fink is the founder and the CEO of BlackRock. I'd look into him. Very interesting guy. He's a smart guy, but you can just see in his eyes that man is fucking
devilish.
You say, yeah, it's devilish, and the amount of deals he makes. I'd look into the IMF as well. There's not many books on it, which is
Of course, they're not going to make a lot of.
they don't make it obvious. People would know if you could see Larry Fink is actually probably one of the top three most powerful people on the planet. He could walk right past you. You'd have
and
no idea.
I didn't
idea.
Even know him.
You would have no idea if he walked past you. Most people would have no idea. That guy has caused so many terrible, terrible things.
But is there a way to profit from it? Because you're...
Listen, if you know where the money, like something I'm heavily going in right now is green energy. Like a lot of my equity, like in terms of stocks and things and cryptos, these guys are pushing so hard for carbon credits. If you like my prediction of what happening in the next 5 years, which I guarantee will happen. Like I'll put my neck on the line for this.
No financial advice.
You'll see CBDCs get massive, which is central bank digital currencies. It's already in China. Mm-hmm. In China, if you cross the road, literally jaywalking fine will get taken off your bank account. Mm-hmm. And the same if there's a massive protest. If there's a massive protest in this city, you literally, because your money's programmable, it's not real money, it's CBDCs. Yeah. So they can literally turn off your money. No, you can't spend any money on transport to get to that area. So if you want trying to buy a train ticket or an Uber to get there, your money doesn't work.
Do you think this is what the Americans
The West will have to, because they have to stay competitive, because it is so competitive. You'll get, I'm telling you, within 5 years, in the West, in Holland, in the States, you'll get a meat allowance. So you can only spend, you're only buy 500 grams of meat a month. If you go over that, no, it's bad for the environment. You can't do that. Why are you flying so much? That's bad for the environment.
You can't. They'll go public, crazy if that.
Yeah, but they're gonna publicly
shame you think the world will go crazy when they lock you in your house? But everyone was fine with it.
But they'll
they
probably
spin
do
it to they, make it. They yeah. always they'll find a way to
exactly,
to push it,
bro. Yeah.
But they'll publicly shame you too, because a lot of people, like in China, if you jaywalk, they put like a big screen with your face on it, like he just jaywalked. Yeah. So everyone knows that he jaywalked.
It's good for the system. Oh, why are you eating so much meat? It's bad for the environment. Oh, why are you traveling so much? Or why do you have three cars? You don't need three cars. Mm-hmm. They'll shut off. You're same with the massive push for electric cars. You can turn off electric cars.
You own nothing.
So, you know, after 10 o'clock, no, it's too much carbon emissions. You can't go out after 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Shut your car off. You can't turn your car on. So you'll see, it sounds crazy now, but if you said in 2018 that they would lock you inside your house where you literally couldn't leave. In South Africa, when I found it was so ridiculous, they were arresting surfers who were literally alone on the beach, not infecting anyone with COVID. They were arresting people. You couldn't even walk your dog in South Africa. That's how bad it was. Definitely. You were not allowed to go out for anything.
Were the protests big in South Africa?
No, they keep it quiet because everyone, they tell how scary it is to stay in your house. You know, it's for the good of the people. They listen, they'll put the same spin on it. They'll use this climate change spin. As much as it's a real thing, climate change is an actual issue. They're going to make profit off it. Mm-hmm. And with CBDCs, it allows them ultimate control. And Fed has already announced that they're doing it. It's not like it's a hypothetical thing. It's literally happening. They're literally building the tech right now.
Europe will follow.
Because they need to stay competitive with the Chinese that are doing this. Mm-hmm. If they don't, they need control. So in China, your money expires. If you earn a paycheck and you don't spend it within a month, the money expires. So they prop up consumers' spending.
That's already happening right now.
It's already in China. Yeah, it's already there. And it's going to happen in the US so soon because they need to prop up consumer spending because people want to save money. It's like, no, your money expires after a month, so you better spend it. And that way, the economy will go up. Yeah, so it looks like everything's going well, but you have no freedom. So you're sacrificing this economic growth, which China's miraculous, the economic growth, but you're sacrificing your freedom for it. It'll be the same in the West. It'll be all a good on stats. You know, consumer spending is so high, all this, but you'll lose freedom because of it.
But China has never really been free like America has.
It's true.
Do you think I think Americans will fight back a little more than the Chinese, but if they succeed, it's a different story.
I think COVID was a perfect example to how strong the narrative you can push is. True. With the mainstream media and with all of this, and all you're hearing, you're getting taught in school, you're getting taught it in the main, you turn your TV and it's all about, oh, this is happening, COVID. Oh, look at the Italian hospitals, they're overrun. Look, many people are dying. But realistically, more people died of suicide than COVID. And you're locking people in the house. More people died of missed doctor's appointments. If you had cancer, you couldn't even go see your doctor because it's all busy and all the hospitals were shut down with COVID people. So if you see how hard they can push that agenda, if 2020 didn't show you some things that they can push this agenda, much as it sounds crazy now, if you're hearing it at the same time and you're getting told in school and in the media, everyone's saying, oh, you can't eat meat, it's terrible for the environment. No. Oh, you can't travel. You can't do this. Oh, you have a normal car. That's not allowed. If you've been told that the whole time, eventually people give in and they listen. And everyone that's opposite that is demonized. I mean, you saw the anti-vax people were like so heavily criticized. Mm-hmm. But now looking back, there's no proof that the COVID vaccine ever helped with COVID symptoms. You got more resistance from COVID from going to the gym than you did from the Pfizer vaccine, which is completely crazy. Mm-hmm. So you got demonized and you weren't allowed to go outside. You weren't even allowed to go for a walk. If they really cared about your health, they would have allowed you to go for a walk instead of jabbing things in your body. And 40 new pharmaceutical billionaires were made in that year. As much as the system, you see a lot of the biggest people spending a lot of money on politicians is pharmaceutical companies just prior to it. 2018 and 2019, they started ramping up the amount of spending they're doing. And on TV commercials, you were never allowed to advertise medicinal products. Mm-hmm. But right as something, you know, there's a big celebrity moment, all of a sudden you're allowed to do that. So you'll see on CNN, they'll be promoting Pfizer or whatever it is. That was never allowed.
Fauci
so recently.
Billions.
Yeah. These guys, it's all a big game. And if you just pay attention, you'll see that in the next couple of years, and everyone will believe it. You know, you'd be crazy for speaking out for that. Oh, you can go in your car after 10 o'clock. You know, it's not crazy. No, but they'll be like, no, that's not allowed. Think about the polar bears. You know, they'll always make it an emotional argument. Because when you fight with logic, you can't logically, if you actually logically looked at COVID, it really wasn't the smart, like everything was done wrong. Locking down the global economy was not the right choice at all.
It's always about having empathy with the elders and stuff.
Yeah. It's like, but what about your grandma? And you know, what about thingy? Like it is the complete wrong, and they'll go with you with logical arguments. Mm-hmm. I mean, they won't go with you with logical arguments, they'll go with emotional arguments. Because if you think logically, now, okay, we've been doing this and this for so long, now all of a sudden eating meat is not allowed. It's like, no, but like logical, oh, what about the cows and the polar bears and the amount of shits they take, is the carbon emissions and whatever. Yeah. They'll go through with emotional arguments, say, oh, you're selfish for doing that. Mm-hmm. Or like, because you don't care about the planet for eating meat. And that's how they hit you, and that's why everyone will fall for it.
Is this one of the reasons or one of the motivations why you want to become super successful? Because I do think...
I'll be off the grid, man. Yeah, you guys, meat allowance, I'll bounce to somewhere where there's no meat allowance. Mm-hmm. I'm a chill student still eating carnivore diet. when Holland says, nah, none of this, I'm in Puerto Rico. Exactly. That's why you want the freedom it gives you. You want to be able to move on as many grids as possible.
If now,
whatever, in America, they don't go for that, but in Europe they do, I'll be in America. Or if South Africa is very lenient with it, I'll go there. You know, you want the freedom to move around the map because the big players, they can move anywhere. Doesn't matter where you're going. Like, you can be in New Zealand, you can be in Japan, whatever it is.
That's what you saw with the big players during COVID. They were still partying.
Everyone in Switzerland having a good time, bro. Yeah. I was recently in Monaco and I was talking with multiple billionaires at lunch, and I was helping with their socials, and they were just telling me about, bro, they were laughing their ass off during COVID. But I was explaining anyhow, I was stuck in my house and I couldn't even walk my dog. And like all of that. And they were laughing like, oh, we were in Sweden. You should have seen the clubs there. And bro, I was like, dude, these fuckers. And they'll do the same shit again and people won't learn.
Yeah.
I think COVID opened a lot of people's eyes, but majority of people will still like, they still don't feel like, you know, a lot of people like fell for it. But now they're like, you know, once bitten, twice shy. You know, they won't fall for it again. But they'll get you from a different angle. You won't even realize it till you look in retrospect. Because I think a lot of people now look back at COVID and they were like, you know, that was overblown. That was unnecessary. I wish I didn't get this injection. I wish I, you know, it wasn't locked in my house for so long. So people in retrospect, the worst people, the ones that can't even admit it now. That even now after like all the new things, you know, the all the emotions and all the fear has gone away. If you can't look back now and say like, bro, I got fucked. They tricked me. Like I was like, I got tricked. If you can't admit it now, those are the really lost people. But the people can admit it. You know, maybe next time they will pay better attention. And you get demonized for going against the system. Like people got canceled on like, where was freedom of speech when if you talked out about, say, the vaccine, you just gave an ulterior perspective on things like, no, a lockdown isn't the best thing to do. We should approach it like this. Bro, you just got taken off social media. That's like fucking ridiculous. How can you only have one opinion? If you only hear this opinion, you silence the other opinion, all of a sudden the narrative gets pushed way more to this one because it's always somewhere in the middle ground. The anti-vaxxers are wrong. Everyone else, it's always somewhere in the middle. But if you get rid of one side, the paradigm shifts way more this way. Because if you silence one part of the argument, but you just like completely change the playing field.
It's actually something I'm learning right now in school. I'm studying information sciences and a subject right now is about like digital polarization. And it's quite interesting because people want to see what they agree with, you know? So if someone agrees with a right-leaning opinion or whatever, they'll push that narrative because it will get more views, more ad spend, more revenue, etc.
Yeah,
so,
but that's the problem. You'll never get a counter-argument.
People get stuck in that.
It goes both ways.
Yeah, people get stuck in their own echo chambers a lot in social media.
Yeah,
if you're only liking like all this right-wing content, that's all you'll see. So you'll think everyone else is seeing it. So you use sports as an example. You really like basketball and you keep liking basketball videos. You know, basketball is your sport.
Yeah.
You believe basketball is the best. You'll keep liking it. But you know, you might be seeing football content.
Yeah.
But because all I see is basketball content. I think everyone else is like only on basketball. No one cares about soccer. Soccer is ridiculous. Yeah. That's like, oh, it's a gay sport. It's for sissies. It's for whatever. You know, and the thing you will be saying, oh, basketball is this. Oh, it's fake. Oh, it's that. Oh, it's this. You know,
we look at those devices every single day. Yeah. You know,
so. And it forms your worldview completely. And if you don't think these massive companies like Meta for Instagram and Facebook or ByteDance from TikTok don't have their own narratives they want to push as well.
Yeah,
I mean, come on, they're human too.
That's an interesting one.
And they need to get legal. I mean, TikTok now has to bend, ByteDance has to bend their knee to the American government. Because, and they if the American government says do this, they have to bend the knee and they have to take it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And those same politicians that get to say you do this, do this, or the same ones are getting promoted by those companies, by the Pepsi, by the Coca-Cola, by the Tesla, all these massive companies. They have to get those politicians and they get a vote on those rules, on all those important policies that we have no say in. We might get to elect the president. But all the policies that are in Congress, those are the real important things. We have no say in it. When is it really a democracy at that point?
It will be interesting to see the elections next year in America. Did you guys remember what happened with Cambridge Analytica?
Yeah.
The scandal?
It's
insane, bro. They created an algorithm to see what people are not sure on their political vote yet.
Mm-hmm.
They're like kind of in between. They targeted all those people in an like unethical way. People had to fill in a survey on Facebook. They got paid $3 for it. And not knowing that all the data you just gave them would be sent to Cambridge Analytica, they used that for pushing a certain agenda for a politician. What the fuck? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I say in English. But they just did it for Trump. Mm-hmm. He denies it, but we all kind of know that Trump used them.
Swing the vote like that. I mean, the middle ground is so important. If you look at like where presidents give their speeches, you know, Texas is always like, there's no point of Joe Biden going to Texas because they're right wing, bro. Like the right wing politician will win in there.
Unnecessary
but it's
effort.
The swing states that are kind of, you know, if you change the vote 2-3%, you can swing it.
Yeah.
And those are the ones where they'll always go give the speech. Like, they'll never go. You'll never see them talk in Texas or countries that are like California. A left-wing person is always going to win in California because it's like 80%. But the swing states and the swing people on social media that are kind of in the middle ground, their algorithms will switch them to one of the two sides or these politicians speaking.
Whoever pays the most,
Exactly.
So it's a bidding war. Then.
It's basically a bidding war on your attention and your opinion. But the whole democracy in the Western world is so broken.
Bro, I've been because we had a conversation with a philosopher kind of? Like a professor philosopher, and he was saying the same thing. Well, at least I was telling him that I don't really believe in that there isn't democracy, because what we just talked about, you can literally, the government can pick what information they give you. So in that way, they can kind of pick your opinion about something. And if they can pick your opinion, they can kind of like pick your vote, which means that it isn't really a democracy.
I mean, there's so much information they completely hide from you, and they make really complex.
But like, the question is it the government or are these, is it Meta and stuff like that?
It's all a big system, and some cogs in the system are bigger. The billionaires are bigger cogs in the system. Yeah.
Like Elon Musk just bought Twitter.
Yeah.
How many narratives can you push if you own a platform like Twitter?
Exactly. With the bigger cogs, everyone's in the same system, and there's people think in the Matrix, it's not some guys in shadowy cloaks in some dark room.
That's what I find.
But everyone is pushing their own agenda. Logically, I would too. If I had the power to,
of course,
I will. And I do through my own socials. I push my own agenda on a way smaller scale than if you're only in CNN and these type of things.
It doesn't have to be bad.
Yeah, you're not going to post anything negative about yourself on social media.
So everyone pushes their own beliefs and what they think is right. If you're a billionaire and you are like for some reason super against abortion, you can spend money to change the world's narrative on that subject. Mm-hmm. Or if you care a lot about climate change, you can really push your agenda. You can add carbon credits and all these type of things. You can push that agenda way more than if you don't care about climate change. Yeah. If there's some Bill Gates, he can push a lot more buttons and change the world a lot more to fit his narrative. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the Matrix is. People are just pushing their own beliefs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you don't like that belief, you know, it's like 1 against 1,000, you know, because it's all financial. You can't beat the guys who can have unlimited ad spend and unlimited money to just market and completely change people's beliefs on the world.
Yeah, so you have to be conscious in picking your own beliefs, basically. That's how you escape the Matrix.
Yeah, but is it what belief is really your own, you know? Like how is anything your own belief? From in school, you're indoctrinated with your beliefs. Stuff. From your parents, you're told things. Like all these different people, from the media, from YouTube, whatever you're hearing, you're just getting other people sharing their opinions down your throat. So any conclusion you come to, you know, is it really your own?
That's why we never really talk about politics in our podcast.
Yeah, I mean,
today's the exception, but normally we don't talk about it because you don't really like, it's not really useful, because we just talked about you can vote on whatever happens, but you can vote on whoever, but the same thing will happen because the agenda's already set.
Right, I'll never vote. Like I don't care. Like I don't spend time. Like I'll spend time studying the system, but I've never looked at like Joe Biden's speech or Trump's speech or whatever it is. Like I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's not even my country, but even in South Africa or in Holland, bro, I don't care who wins. Yeah. Like it's literally because A, you can't change it. And B, there's the game, the rules of the game, and they change ever so slightly if it's right wing or left wing. The game's the same. Mm-hmm. As much as they make big promises, it stays the same every time. The real people in power, it doesn't matter who's president, they stay in power and the things stay the same. Nothing major changes between these different presidents. So the game's the same, and you want to play the game as well as possible. So if you're spending all this time, you know, people get so obsessed by like football teams or whatever it is. I'm wearing a football shirt, so it's ironic, but I don't even support Man United. I hate Man United.
Oh, damn.
But
take off that shirt, bro.
Old Ronaldo shirt. I'm so anyway, it's good. So people get so like obsessed about their football team. They're like, arguing with these Barcelona fans, arguing against these Madrid fans. Bro, you're still broke. You're still stupid. You're spending all this time and energy supporting a team. They don't care about you, first of all. Cool, it's nice maybe to enjoy watching a football game. But if you're spending so much time, you're buying all their merch and, you know, you're arguing with the Madrid fans. Oh, no, Messi's better. Mm-hmm. But like, you're still broke. Like,
you're basically manipulated by the team to join that match.
Completely.
I just talked about this with a friend. Like, these people are like so motivated, supportive. If they if they put all that energy into something else.
Yeah,
some of these Ronaldo fanboys or Messi fanboys spend as much time doing something useful. I mean,
You know what I found really interesting is when Putin said, I don't know if you've saw that, you probably saw this video, when Putin said like all American presidents, they come in office
and they
with
meet
promises.
The men in the black suits and then they change plans.
And then it all changes. And suddenly,
he's seen what, like 5 or 6 American presidents in his reign. So I mean,
he probably knows
the system
about
more than most people.
So he basically said all the American presidents, they always come with like great ideas, and then they get into office, and then people with black suits, they come in office and they say, hey, this is how it really works, this is what really happens. And then they just follow along. The president isn't really
controlled.
Come on, there's no way that Joe Biden, who isn't even able to talk properly, there's no way he's the one who's really reading the country.
But the whole election, to speak on that, that Joe Biden didn't win. It's people that didn't like Trump. Yeah. Like people just, they didn't vote for Biden. They voted not for Trump.
Yeah, the least worst option.
Yeah.
You know, Winston Churchill had this great quote, and he basically said, if you want to see a good argument on why democracy isn't a good option, just talk to the average voter. They're so stupid. Like if you ask someone, why did you vote for Trump or why did you vote for Biden? Most of them don't really know. They just say like, oh yeah, I saw a great meme about Trump and suddenly I'm motivated and I find him funny. Or I'm a Kanye West fan.
It all comes back to education. It all comes back to education and knowledge.
It's a tool. Mandela said education is the most powerful tool to shape the world. Yeah. And you want to shape your own beliefs as much. So I recommend people just actively learn, not just passively sit and listen to all these things they're told, but actively learn. Okay, I'm going to read this book because I want to learn this and this. I'm going to listen to this podcast. I'm going to listen to the interview from this guy because he built this company. I want to learn how he did that. Yeah. You know, you want to actively learn things from people you want in life because the information you have gives you the result of your life. So people that you don't want to adopt their life, don't adopt their way of thinking because their way of thinking gave them that life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're totally right. I think it's also objective education. So see more perspectives and come to your own conclusion, right? Because again, education is also biased.
That's why I so hate when if people silence one side of the argument.
Yeah.
Because for healthy discourse, you want both. And the answer is never this side or that side. It's always somewhere in the middle. Maybe it's a little bit more to that side. Maybe it's a little bit more to that side. But always it's somewhere in the middle. So to eliminate one side of the argument is the worst thing you can do. Because you get so stuck to the other side and it just gets more and more extreme if you're not allowed to speak up. But I think right now the paradigm is like shifting a bit. I mean, you see the pendulum. It was so far left, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And now people are getting tired. People are getting sick. So now the pendulum is going to swing right. And it's probably going to go too far right again.
I think it's already
happening. And it's a circle like that. So it's going to go way too far right. As much as I don't think of myself as left or right. I'm me. I don't identify with any belief system. I'm not right wing. I'm not left wing. I'm not anything. I'm me. I have my own beliefs and it's completely unique to anyone.
Yeah.
But the system is going to swing way more because people got so tired of how far left it went with a lot of ridiculous things happening. It's going to swing really far right and too far right, I think. And then it's going to swing back. And that's how it goes. If you look throughout history, it's always a pendulum because it goes too far. People get tired of it and it swings back really quickly. It's going to go like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we've got a conversation next week with a really big Dutch politician and he's quite far right. Mm-hmm. And you see that most of his fans are fans because they're just fed up of all the things that have happened in the past 4 years. So most of the arguments that he always uses are based on emotion. Okay, how did you feel when the lockdown happened? How did it feel when you had to pay the gas bill and it was a crazy amount, but they did send so many billions to Ukraine?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's messed up, man.
Yeah, but I think CBDCs will be like the official the downfall of the Western world.
Can you invest in that?
The Fed now Fed release like it's already announced. You can't. It's government owned. Okay. But interesting thing for people, I would look into the creation of the Fed. People think the Federal Reserve is government owned. Privately owned by people you don't know. Then they print the money.
That's the scary stuff. That's what they explain in Creature of Jekyll Island. Right?
What's it called?
Creature of Jekyll Island. It's a book. Yeah. The whole system is broken, but it's good that it's broken because else you couldn't get out of it. Mm-hmm. There's these glitches in this matrix, and you got to use those glitches to escape and get kind of above the system, and you can look down over
the opportunities.
And push opportunities completely. And you need to spot those and use them as best as possible. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of things that are completely wrong, like the banking system. If people understood how the banking system works, there would literally be a revolution tomorrow. People have no idea. People are getting fucked so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the basic explanation is that none of the money is real. Because say you give 1,000 euros. And this is printed by the Federal Reserve, which there's no gold by backing that already. So it's already fake, but it's to carry on. They're given to the banks and the commercial banks print more money than the Fed does, but they print it through debt. So if you now take this 1,000 euros that you were given from this stimulation check and you put it in a bank account, they used to keep 10% and they would lend out 900. They would keep 10%. So you think your money is there. So you have 1,000 euros on your bank account. But that money was lent to me. So I have 900 and I lend it out again. So you have 900.
It's unlimited.
But now already there's 3,000 or 2,800 in the system, but there's actually 1,000 real money. So who has the money now? Answer is nobody really does because the bank lends it all out. And what they charge you is the real money, the interest. And that seeps up to the top. So everyone has all this fake money. We all have this money on our balance sheets, but none of it is real because it's all just debt. Because the bank owes you money and I owe you money and you owe me money. Yeah. So the whole thing doesn't work. So you have a bunch of zeros on the balance sheet, but it's all debt. If you look at the underlying value, A, there's no more gold backing it in 1971, after the Bretton Woods Agreement.
Fucking President Nixon, right?
There's nothing backing your money anyway. So it's fake money that is made more fake now. Yeah. And people are getting, so if people aren't really understood like how this all works, how private banks literally just print money to creating debt in the economy and labeling it as money. Most everything you see is literally just debt. There's no real money behind it. But the real part is the interest. And you charge interest for this money they lend out. If I borrow money from the bank, they charge me ridiculous fees. They're giving me like 9% like interest, and they're giving you like 1% on the money you have in there. So A, they're lending out your money to me. They're charging me 9 times the interest. They're giving you fuck all for it. And they invest that 10% as well. So they loan it out to me. Mm-hmm. I have to pay interest. So I'm paying the money. And that 10% that you left, they don't just keep it in cash. They're buying things in the markets and increasing that as well. So you're getting fucked in like 3 ways from the bank. Literally like completely. Jesus. If people really understood how it all worked, bro, you're getting finessed so hard and people have no idea.
Yeah.
And what's the option? What's a better way? Because there isn't really another option than not.
They made that for a reason, but finance is the language of the elite. Back in the Roman times, they wouldn't allow the peasants to read the Bible. And peasant, by definition, is common person. So that's the average person. It wasn't the lords that controlled everything. You had the peasant had no idea. They couldn't read. So they would have to go to the pastor to read the Bible. And he would not say what it really is. He would put his own spin on it. So that's how it is today. The same with finance. People know nothing about finance, so they have to go to the banks. They have to go to the school system to learn the things. So, but you can take it into your own hands and learn. It's the same with a doctor. You don't know anything about health, so you go see a doctor. You don't know anything about the law. Most people don't even know the basic human rights. One of the books I recently read was literally the Constitution. But people don't know their basic rights. I mean, you're literally a living human and you don't know what your rights are. So you have to go see a lawyer. I know my basic rights. If I get stopped, I know exactly what I'm allowed to do, what I'm not allowed to do, all of that. People have no idea. You have to see a lawyer for your health. You have to see a doctor. You have to see a lawyer for to read the law. You have to go to a doctor for your health. You have to go to a bank to understand finance. It's the same as it was. They mask it for you. So you have to see these experts. And all the doctors in the world are trained by these unis. And all the unis are funded are by Moderna, Pfizer. These people literally write the textbooks. They fund it all. And they just tell you to promote, no, our medicine is good. If someone has a headache, you give them this. They don't teach you any of the preventative measures. The whole medical system is built off of these companies that, A, there's no money in preventing something. China has a way better system. If a doctor has 100 families and he gets paid every week, they're not sick. So when they're sick, they're not making any money, which is how it should be, because you pay to be healthy, not be sick, which is the complete wrong way around. In America, you rack up a bunch of money when people are sick. Mm-hmm. So of course, the people that are producing the food are in cahoots with the people that are selling the cures to the diseases this food gives. So it's all a complete scam and it's one big circle and they're just literally dancing around you, fucking you in the ass where they're all making money off it. It is, when I talk to the really high level people, like when you go 100 mil plus, These guys all know the system. Yeah. And they laugh at the people who don't. I was in Monaco, these same guys who were sitting back, they had APs on the wrist, Pateks, smoking cigars, laughing at the plebs, the normal people, they have no idea. Finance is the language of the elite. If you understand that, if you understand how the system works, you have such an edge over those who don't. Because you understand how not real money is. The only thing that's real is the interest on the money. Mm-hmm. That's the real money. And that gets sent back up. Because I'm paying that interest back up to the banks. They send it back to the Fed, goes back to those anonymous people.
You pay the interest on fake money.
Yeah.
So it's
all a finesse.
But it's funny because exactly what you just said, like every time you talk to a rich person, we talk to someone, I think he had a net worth of like $250 million. And he said the exact same thing. Like, we're all getting fucked. But the only thing is I'm a billionaire, so I get fucked a little less.
And it's something that I see with a lot of successful entrepreneurs I speak to, is that they're all very skeptical about never been that way. I've always been skeptical about the people who talk about this stuff, but now I'm starting to realize I need to learn a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, if I put myself in the right rooms to really learn like some crazy things, and that gives you so much more perspective. Yeah, like you want to learn these things. That's why I like traveling so much. It's because I learned different like ways of life. Like I really like how the Asians think about money.
Yeah.
Like they They think of it as energy. It's like they'll never, you'll never hear like a really rich Asian person talk about how much money they have. And that's why whenever someone asks me net worth or my monthly income, I won't say it anymore. I used to, there's all clips of me saying it. I was like all proud of it, like American way of thinking. Uh-huh. But they read of it as energy. And you never want to reveal how weak or powerful you really are. Mm-hmm. So if you hear this, money is energy. If you have 100 mil, you have a lot of energy behind you. You can move a lot of things. You can put a lot of forces in play, you know, whatever it is, if it's now hiring security or if it's pushing movements, mm-hmm. you have a lot of energy behind you. If you're completely broke, you have no energy. You only have the physical hours you can spend doing something. So if you don't believe in abortion, we'll go back to that. You can go stand outside an abortion clinic with a sign for 8 hours a day, maybe, but you also have to go to work, you have to sleep. And that's all the energy you can possibly give. Where if you're a billionaire, you can fund politicians. You have a lot more energy behind you to push your narratives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you think of money as energy, you don't want to give up your time for this energy, which is another great way of thinking. And also the water and the energy are also very linked to what I talked about earlier. But it's very important. I think how the Asians move and their beliefs are so good, and they're dominating the game. Like you don't hear any of them because you never meet any like billionaires talking on podcasts like you do Americans. You don't have like Mark Cuban
or
like
they don't wear the,
you'll never know. But those guys have serious money and they can really, really move very intelligently.
I think moving in silence gives you an advantage too.
Yeah.
I'm not pretty sure. I think it was Rockefeller. He did something like he bought like a company and then he buy like the competitor too. But they both didn't know that Rockefeller was buying it because he was that silence with the things that
people don't know that Coke and Pepsi are owned by the same people too. People
seriously?
Like, yeah, they own by like a complete same people.
All these big brands, they're just owned by one.
It gives you an advantage. Yeah. It does.
Yeah, it's a complete joke. If you look at the balance sheet of any company, it is BlackRock and Vanguard, any company in the world, and extremely the American ones, any media company. If you look at Meta, the biggest shareholder is BlackRock.
Are they publicly traded?
No. Oh. No. But you can give them money. They're like financial institutions. They're basically, you give them money and they invest it for you, but they hold the voting rights, which is a little clause that is probably one of the most important things. Mm-hmm. But so they own majority of, they're the biggest shareholder. They all own more Tesla than Elon Musk. They own more Amazon than Jeff Bezos. They own more of anything than anyone else.
Yeah,
those two manage it. They have more say in what Tesla does than Elon Musk does.
But I'll never understand that. Like Elon Musk, like if you've got enough money, why do you sell all your stock and give it to BlackRock?
Well, you can't eat your stock, you know? You can hold 100% of your company, but A, that's terrible because you have no incentive. You know, if you want to give shares away to high ups so that they can move and like if their company 10Xs, that their shares 10X because you can't just keep paying them all.
Yeah.
So if you have give them equity in the business, it's way more advantageous for them.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same with BlackRock. I mean, Elon Musk, he might have a company that on paper he's worth 200 bill because he owns what, like 15% of Tesla, and Tesla is like 1.5 trillion, something like that. And so he has a 200 bill net worth, but it's in Tesla shares. You can't buy a house with Tesla shares. You can't buy groceries with Tesla shares. So he has to sell them to someone.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the time, these billionaires just borrow against their assets. They never need to sell. It's literally just accumulate, borrow, die. So their kids still have these assets and they can just borrow against it. Elon Musk gets charged literally no interest. If he borrows a billion, his interest rate will be like 0.001 because it's so safe. Because there's so many Tesla shares to back it. So he just borrows money to get liquid. He buys a boat. He just borrows 200 mil from the bank, buys the boat. He never pays back the debt because he just rather hold his shares because the shares earn more than that 0.01% he's charged. And the banks can give away money because he's so safe. They can liquidate the shares.
That's exactly what Michael Jackson did. Because when he had like the Sony catalog, I think it was worth like 900 million and he never wanted to sell it because he knew if he sold it, then Sony would kill him and shit. And they eventually did, if you're talking about conspiracies. Yeah. And so he basically did the same thing. He just lent against the asset.
That's what all the billionaires do. And I was seeing these guys buy planes and just literally for free because they just borrow the money against the assets. And because the interest rate is so low, they never need to really worry about it. So it's literally just buy, borrow, die.
So they
buy all these cash producing assets, massive residential buildings, all of this that produce some income.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for their balance sheet because now they can borrow against that so cheaply. It gives them cash flow because they rent it out. So they are just playing the game at a whole nother level. And it's literally unbeatable because it keeps compounding.
Yeah.
So you want to get up there to get all those advantages that they get. Like they literally can... They don't spend any money. They just spend debt.
Mm-hmm.
And they just keep buying like massive companies which produce some income, a lot of acquisitions, buy massive like commercial buildings, like office spaces. Someone has to own all of those. You drive past a big city, Those aren't just there. Someone owns those buildings and they're producing shitloads of money. But you don't really know who owns those buildings. So that is all. The real high level stuff is the infrastructure. Someone owns the dams, the water, all of that. It's not government owned. They all lend out to private institutions to build all that. Someone gets a contract for $3 billion to go build that dam. Mm-hmm. It's not government. Government just outspends everything. It's same with consulting. It's the biggest scam. It's consulting companies.
We had someone on the podcast and he's got like a government with a contract with the government and he gets paid.
They literally get all the decisions that are made. Same in France. It was a very suspicious company that did all their COVID regulations. France just pays them $1 billion and is like, help us with COVID, you know?
Yeah.
And they just get paid these massive government contracts because the government can't enforce these things. But these private companies, because governments are very inefficient, private companies are very efficient. Mm-hmm. So then they'll go ahead and go on the buses, they'll tape all the middle seats, all of that, and they have this $1 billion. But this private company decides what they do with that. It's not the government. The government just gives them the problem, like, okay, there's too much COVID or whatever. And they cook up all these solutions, these private companies. And all these private companies have owners that have their own agendas and they're all linked in and they're all owned by the same companies, the BlackRock Vanguard. So it's one big circle.
It all links back.
Yeah.
Again, but do you think it's like a group of people that all know each other that are like controlling it, or is it just...
I know. There's not men in robes with a cloak. Exactly. Yeah, but, you know, but they
like
of course,
sacrificing there's those deals.
Yeah. No, like what would be the point of that? There's no point of that. These guys, but they do move together because if they move together, they can make way more difference. Like there's no way the food industry doesn't just want people to be unhealthy. They're definitely in cahoots with the medical industry in America, which is such two big massive industries. They don't want, now the medical industry wouldn't want all this healthy organic food and people aren't getting sick. That cuts their bottom line. So you want to keep it in one circle that helps everyone. You don't want someone's bottom line to get absolutely destroyed because you're making changes. They won't allow that. Mm-hmm. They'll do everything in their power to prevent that. So it's one big circle and everyone's connected.
Yeah.
Having conversations like these just make me want to like live off the grid.
Yeah.
Just disappear.
Yeah, you can't live off the grid anymore.
Nah. I want to thank you, Mauritz. This been definitely an eye-opening conversation.
Yeah.
I appreciate you having me on. Amazing studio. You guys always showed me a good time. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate it. I hope the viewers enjoyed as well. I think there was a lot of value in there. So if you paid attention, I think it opened a lot of people's eyes. That's what I'm here to do. All I advise people is, you know, go check out my Instagram, check out my YouTube, Mauritz_Neo. There's more information on there. But I hope everyone paid attention. Everyone must sub up to these guys. They're killing it with their podcast. I think in Holland, they really are doing very, very well.
Thank you.
I know, amazing place, good quality setup, everything here. And I had a great time. I want to thank you guys for having me on.
Appreciate it, bro.
Anytime you're around, just visit us. You
We should definitely do this again in South Africa. In 100%.
Next time, I'll be at my place in South Africa.
Sure,
all the best, man. Cheers.
Cheers.